I get some interest. So when I was coming to listen to it. So as I'm sitting here, I'm in extreme pain. So I wanted to do the presentation myself, but I requested Sunny to do the presentation. I'll just give context to the presentation as we start.
Well, that's what I mean. I knew there was some challenge, and I'm very sorry, but I've got some back pain here, if you like some. No, seriously, because I know exactly what you had I was in extreme pain yesterday. But just give the buster pain. Yes, Miss Williams.
Sure, so I think that if the person in the meeting is injured, perhaps they should go to the nurse in the old assembly. I mean, for instance, we don't know, do you fall on your head? I mean, are you going to cause out with concussion? What exactly? I think that she should be taken to the...
came in and... we didn't like you. I once had to go to the clinic in the middle of a meeting and it took time away from substantive issues. You know, on the other hand, you know, when people are so enthusiastic, maybe you like just 4 minutes and then someone could take you to our clinic, which is here in the National Assembly. So let's do it that way and then you'll feel happy that you're here and I know exactly how you feel, but take some basket pain first, all right. Now let's just make a quick start, and I'm very sorry about that, really very sorry. I have to go and see the ancestors, see what's going on in this committee. A very quick CV is the DVD for Trade and Investment in South Africa, etc. She joined DGI in 1998. And she's the Deputy Director for Asia, Economic Relations, etc. IPSA, she's instrumental in conceptualizing bilateral negotiations with both India and China. And she joined TISA in 2008 in the export promotion. She has been appointed the DDG for Trade and Investment. The role as DDG involves the management, etc., the economics and business degree, diploma in trade law policy, sits on an executive board of DGI and several other ones internationally. And Brand SA. Thank you. If you could just give us a little contextual thing and then Ms. Naidu could perhaps take you down to our clinic in Parliament. Right.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to come and present on what DGI has considered in terms of trade promotion activities or initiatives. I just want to also give a clarification in terms of the context of our presentation that we are here to present on the draft strategy that we have considered rather than a policy. Ms. Mlulwi touched on the policy imperatives and ours is focusing on the strategy. The current strategy that we are to present here today is a build-on on the existing one that has been in place and being implemented by the DGI. It's focusing on three critical phases, including the analysis on research, test of research, interview relevant stakeholders, the benchmarking exercise that we have considered. We've undertaken engagements with like-minded countries, including Brazil, Indonesia, India, Turkey, as well as we did some engagement with the U.S., but it was not an extensive exercise. We've also done a survey through the existing export base, focusing on past exporters as well as existing and those that want to enter our sphere. We've also had consultative engagements throughout the nine provinces. We've also established a reference group comprised of experts within our sphere of work, including officials from the Reserve Bank, the National Treasury, Agriculture, the provinces, as well as other formations in the provinces, because you would understand that the provinces have, some of them have taken a lead in terms of this work. So they have what they call export clubs and export consortia, whom we have engaged since we started the process.
And we've decided, honorable members, we've decided on a title for our strategy, which we consider as an integrated national export strategy, because it envisions a consolidation of the work that has been done within our space from a national perspective as well as at the provincial perspective. I will hand over to Zamele to do the presentation. What we request is that we overlook the earlier slides of our presentation because some of the issues have already been touched on in terms of the political context as well as the other areas that appeared in Ms. Lumbi's presentation. And one of the things that we're going to do from a practical perspective, there were questions earlier on to members in terms of how we engage in the respective regions. Zanele will touch on that in terms of the diversification strategy that we've come up in engaging in Africa, the total initiatives that we've considered with other developing countries, and how we'll advance the initiatives within AGOA. I'll now hand over to Zanele. Honorable Chair, thank you.
Just
to
allow
really, you know, DDG, we can make the vision card available to you. You know, that's the word for word transcript. So you won't look up, you know. I really would like you to leave on that medical basis, please. Thank you. And this is you.
Good morning to the chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members. My name is Zanele Fani. I work under the leadership of Ms. DDG Pumlan Mampai. I'm responsible for export promotion and marketing within the TISA division, and I know that the request was not made, but I work with my colleague, Mr. Jacob Mwase, who's also responsible for export development and support. So the strategy that we'll be introducing actually looks at the value chain of exports in its entirety and looks at different aspects for which the two of us are responsible under the guidance of Ms. Mwase. I think as has already been mentioned, just in terms of how the presentation will be put forward, we will put the approach of the review, as DDG has highlighted, this is a review of existing work. We will skip over the policy context, I think, between the presentation yesterday and earlier today. It's not necessary, and I think you have the material should you need to refer to it. But the crux of our work starts on South Africa's exports performance, and then looking at that to say what is the NES at a glance, and it looks at the various the vision that talks to the commission and the slides that actually culminate into the document. It's comprised of different pillars which will make the bulk of the presentation itself, and those are undergirded by a monitoring and evaluation framework. And because it is a document that's currently in progress, we just thought it would be beneficial for the members to know what is our envisaged way forward in terms of bringing this work or to a culmination or to an end. So just the approach in terms of how we envisage this is that what we are looking at is the current state of South African exports. And looking at it is what drives it and the need to actually strengthen those drivers. And the reason why we are doing this is to actually get into a desired state where South Africa commands certain influence in terms of its export performance and removing the obstacles that talk to that and looking at instruments that enable all of that, which ultimately culminate into the INES, which is the strategy. I think going forward, I'll just say the INES instead of talking the whole word. I hope that will be acceptable to the members. What we are aiming to do with the strategy is increasing South Africa's capacity to export, but particularly not just any exports, value-added manufactured products that are diversified to various global markets, and by doing that, to strengthen our country's export performance and enhancing our trade and business environment, all of which are looking at the competitiveness of South Africa's company and the sectors in the export space. I had said that we would skip the policy context, but just suffice it to say that it has looked at the various policies that are that have been established and take the lead in terms of export performance from there. I think earlier on today there was quite substantial work that was done by Ms. Tole Lwamudi in terms of the trade policy and the tariffs, and obviously look at our transformation policies considers all of that, and we'll see as I go through the presentation how that manifests itself. I think the first one of interest would be to just look at trends in global in global trade and to compare South Africa to other developing members and high income members as articulated in the WTO. We are all aware then of the effect of the global crisis, where we see that generally South Africa has followed the trend of other members, where there was a substantial decline in terms of trade post the Uruguay run, which I think Ambassador would have talked to, is influenced by the by the crisis, and there's been an uptrend post that, but suffice it to say, South Africa has been following similar patterns in terms of the trends that the other world countries have been going to, and we have seen that there are not so much volatility, but at times we exceed those world trends, and at times we are just under. If you now look, and this has been an exercise, I think DDG referred that there's been extensive exercise, a study that influenced the document to how it has been looked. And one of the things that has been done is looking at South Africa's market share in terms of export performance as far back as 1948. Now, if you look at actual values, looking at FOB, which is free on board, that's the classification that's used basically to calculate or who takes responsibility in terms of whether it's a supplier. So it's one of the freight terminology that is used. But you would see that South Africa, in terms of value of exports from 1948, has gone up significantly and is now almost at the levels of $100 billion in terms of exports. But the light blue, the dark blue line then shows that in terms of our share of the export performance, looking at that period, there has been a downward trend from 2%, and at this stage, at the end of 2014, you'll see that we are at 0.5%, which is quite healthy compared to other countries that we compare ourselves with. And just supporting evidence that talks to that in terms of the our balance of the current account, you would see that overall, even in the period going back to 1990, always that at most times our trade, our imports exceed our exports, and you would see that reflected in the trade and the values that talk to that. So this is the context at which the strategy talk to, and there's been a lot of other work in terms of the critical analysis, and if the members require that, I think that can be support just to say what was the basis of actually reviewing this work. So the IMES, or the strategy itself, really, it has a vision of actually having South Africa working from a globally competitive base that is actually informed by best practice, and I think there were various elements of that that were shown through the different presentation yesterday, in terms of trade policy and industrial policy, and looking at the various sector development strategies which the members would have been exposed to through presentation from the Industrial Development Division, and having a look at that to say, how do we then maintain our market share in the traditional markets with which we have traded, and how do we then substantially increase our market share in prioritized new high-growth markets through various instruments that I'll talk to on later in the presentation. And what we have done is look at six pillars that really form the strategy. The pillars that talk to that are actually really looking at competitiveness in terms of our participation in the international arena, and saying what is the environment within South Africa and even to a certain extent externally that will allow us to compete on a stable footing. There's also the institutional framework that we look at, and the institutional framework really looks at stakeholder and alignment internally to say how do we then fulfill our export agenda. I think not to deviate from the process, if I can compare to a presentation that was done yesterday, we saw that when Mr. Yunus was talking about the investment, I don't want to say climate, but the investment climate, for lack of a better word, within South Africa, it's convoluted. There's lots of stakeholders who are participating. It's the same for the export agenda. So we are saying that the institutional framework that talks to that will actually alleviate some of the obstacles that contribute to that. If you don't mind, I'll drink some water because I'm getting thirsty. The third pillar that talks to within the strategy stuff is saying, against this backdrop, which markets are we then going to go to? How are we going to prioritize those and diversify those and talk to the access of that? I think through Xolelwa Nlumbi's presentation, we saw that Africa certainly is receiving a lot of focus, and I'll talk to a detailed presentation. And the emerging markets that we talk to include the Middle East, BRICS region, and the Latin America. So say, what is the strategy that we'll use to enter into those markets? What is pivotal to South Africa's desire or agenda of really having export-led growth is really increasing or diversifying our exporter base. So there is, we are actually following, and I'll talk to that later on, the ITCO, the International Trade Center's market of actually approach of retaining existing exporter, expanding and deepening current exports, and also creating new exporters. And this pillar really talks specifically to that. I think yesterday there was also a conversation that talked to terminology in terms of investment, and you know, anecdotally there were variations that talked to referring to clients as aliens or investors as aliens, etc. But that actually just anecdotally talks to the pillar that talks to export promotion, but particularly country branding. How is South Africa perceived in terms of its ability to actually export? What influence do those perceptions that are held outside, how much do they contribute in terms of our products that are purchased? And aligned with that, what are the export promotion mechanisms that are then appropriate to use in specific markets and looking at that? And then the final pillar in terms of the export value chain, obviously then look at the incentives that are currently offered and financing that talks to exports. And I will go into detail also talking to this, but what are the instruments that at least from government perspective are actually enabling the financial instruments that then help our exporters to do this? All of this is undergirded by really government-wide monitoring and evaluation, and it really forms, it's not the pillar, but it undergirds all of the pillars. And the aim of all of this, ultimately, with the mission that we have, is looking at the various policies that I didn't talk to, but articulated specifically in the NDD, that the aim should be to grow exports by 6% by volume per annum as of 2030, and in that, making sure that the manufactured products grow by 7% per annum. You saw in a previous slide that I made to say that one of the goals that we have, we are currently at 0.5% of market share, and we acknowledge that it will take a significant amount of time, but to raise that to capturing 1% of the total world export share by 2030 in terms of value. And there is a services component of that, which according to the various policy documents talks to actually ensuring that services, which are intrinsically linked to manufacturing, also make up part of that target at least 40% to talk to that, and that manufactured products constitute 40% of the output. So really, that is what the presentation will go into, the various details that talk to that. The vision, I think I have highlighted in terms of, you know, that is what was at the apex of the charter, but really saying that through aggressive marketing, we are going to go into certain markets, those that we have prioritized, maintain our share in the traditional markets, expanding our exporter base, inculcating an export culture. That's the vision that talks to the that we are going to do through the strategy. And the mission that talks to that is really, as I said, diversification, and there's a specific pillar that talks to that. But it's really to look at our products. So there is a need to diversify our export basket and really add value-added manufactured goods and services, developing new markets, which are an emphasis of Africa, as was highlighted earlier on, and other markets, and growing the exporter base. And that really does not take away from the fact that our current basket has 80% of our exports are actually attributable to the super exporters, but including the different SMEs, historically disadvantaged enterprises, co-ops, villages, and also the black industrialists. I think these committees will in the future or may have already another work stream within the DTI on black industrialists. So in terms of the export value chain, we are also considering that as part of diversifying and expanding the exporter database that we are talking to. I won't repeat these national targets. I think I highlighted them in the main slide. But really to talk to the strategic, the first pillar that we talked to. I had already said that we are actually looking at the ITC's template in terms of the approach to our strategy, where we are looking at border in issues. So it's things that are actually impacting on the export chain, but within the borders of the country. And I don't know how much we're able to see, but elements of that include capacity development of the actual exporter itself, capacity diversification itself, and also the development of their competency themselves. And you'll see that in the pillars we talked to that. The border issues, they relate to trade facilitation and transaction, and this is similar also to the investment presentation that was made to say that in terms of facilitation, whether you're facilitating investment and trade, there are certain nuances. I think there was a question that came from the honourable member using the Angola example to say there are issues that actually affect the export process, and those are issues that take place at the border. And in terms of the border out now, this is in the market that we are talking to say what is it that is there. So you're looking at issues specifically, what are the opportunities for the product that you can actually take to that market, taking into cognizance their preferences, what it is there, you know, their trade patterns with other countries, looking at your actual promotion mechanisms, all of which will determine the success. So the instruments that we currently use, in a national pavilion appropriate in that market, a trade mission, do you leverage off state visits, etc.? What is it that as government we can do? So those are the border out issues that we are talking to. And the last pillar, which is not really the focus of the document, but because we are actually looking at this approach, the four-gear approach, to say, what has been the developmental impact in terms of exports? And obviously for us, it's really in terms of increasing the exporter base, diversifying, it's increasing manufacturing. So there is an implied lever in terms of that, in terms of developmental issues, which we don't really talk to in the document. But I think in terms of the trade policy, there were elements of regional development that talked to that, poverty reduction, which is ultimately the goal. So the various targets that we had in the national targets are implied in the approach that we actually used. Now, perhaps before I go into the action plan itself, in terms of process, what we did as DDG highlighted, we went on an extensive consultation, yeah, highlighted what the issues are. So the action plans that you're going to see are the...
Explain what you mean by extensive consultation.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if that means within the department, government.
Okay. In terms of consultations, what we have actually done, first of all, there was a study of the work that was done. So DDG highlighted that there were three phases. There was the critical analysis, which included research, desktop has studies, benchmark exercising, where there was actually visits to the different countries which were highlighted. There was a survey that was done of existing past stakeholders. There was also consultations with the different trade promotion agencies, which currently the Provincial Investment Promotion Agency played a dual role of both investment promotion and trade promotion, so the West Rose, the TIGSINs, the GDA, as well as the group of exporters. Now, there was a specific reference group that included all of the above, but inclusive also of the 19 export councils, which are under the leadership of the DGI, so the sector-specific export council, fresh produce, etc. So the review itself, it actually started at the end of 2012. So this extensive consultation implies that getting input, say, this was the first draft done in 2006, 2009. What are the current issues? So there was a specific reference comprising of all the stakeholders that I mentioned, but inclusive of different government departments as well. So international relations is part of the stakeholders, national treasury, SARS. So all of the stakeholders that are in the export value chain as part of the reference group. So each time we get the input, then draft different chapters. So the pillars are, say, are the different chapters of the strategy. So we would consult with them, what are the issues, how do we then articulate them. So the final results, which is what we are presenting to you today, are the action plans, having highlighted what the issues are, that then help to say this is what we are going to do in terms of the of the strategy itself. Okay, I hope that is clear. Okay. And what I also maybe may add at this point in time, because we are not reading the document in its entirety, the approach as well is very similar to the National Industrial Policy Framework, where there was the NIPF, but there are different iterations of IPACs, which talk to different activities that are going to be meted out or be executed at different periods. So our view at this stage is that we want to do the same, because the action plan, you cannot do everything in one attempt. So our view is that we want to have this strategy, similar as the National Industrial Policy Framework, and out of that, a combination of annually iterations of the export promotion and development action plan, for lack of a better word, that then talks to say these are the issues that must be resolved over the short term, the medium term, and the long term in order to then improve South Africa's capacity to export and compete in the export market. Okay. So the action plans that then talk to that, out of the pillar that I've talked to, is really in the enabling environment. The first pillar is the development of a legislative framework which would give weight and substance to the implementation of the INEF. And we are proposing the National Export and Development and Promotion Act. And where we are, I also just want to mention, I took heed of the instructions that you gave, that we are really still at the regulatory impact assessment. So part of our consultation was that before you even implement legislation, you need to conduct that regulatory impact assessment, and it will go through the different stages, and eventually it will then serve to this committee, depending on what the speaker does. But we are really at the early stages where we are consulting with the different exporters. I think just to say, as part of that, in the last 2 days, there was a meeting held with Western Cape. It's moved on to KZN and also Southern, where the bulk of the exporters are. So the promotion of the national export and vision targets, I mentioned that at the beginning to say what we want to do. But what is critical is that we need to ensure that we get support of the leadership for the strategy. So at MINMEC, for the ministers and the MECs, and the interministerial committee, we want that to be elevated to the effect where the president also does almost an export status in his status of exports in his in the SONAR itself. Once the action plan includes the identification and the strengthening of our comparative advantage, where we see where does South Africa have this comparative advantage, strengthen the institutional support for those particular sectors, and to and this you know, this work cut across a lot with what the industrial development division does. So part of that, you know, you said that develop a management matrix to show that the linkage between the sectors that we identify, and I have talked to that. So in one of the earlier slides, you would have seen, you know, our alignment with the IPEP talking to that, the empowerment programs that talk to that, you know, in terms of what we want to do. And then the I think a key component, again, is the alignment across different government departments that are talking to that. So, and the weakness that were identified would really want to talk to reducing the input costs in terms of improving productivity, the innovation itself, deeper engagement with the different stakeholders, but specifically with a view to providing a more coherent support framework. We know that part of our port tariffs are some of the most expensive, and there have been engagements with Transnet by us and also the different stakeholders to really looking at that. In terms of national treasury and the different GOV exchange rate volatility, that does ultimately affect our export performance, the rebate that would talk to that, looking at export clustering. So this we acknowledge, and I think there was heavy emphasis, if I can compare all of like and the presentation done yesterday, where we saw that there's at least 18 departments that are involved in the 18 in the just at national level in the investment process. And this is similar here in terms of the export process. We did not elaborate to that extent, but policy coordination across government to really support the work that we are doing. The pillar then, or the second chapter of the strategy, then talks to strengthening the institutional framework through stakeholder alignment. And really what that talks to is really you know, avoiding the weaknesses that I talked to earlier, the lack of alignment, the inadequate communication between stakeholders, lack of information specifically. And in order to avoid this, you then need require the commitment from a broad range of stakeholders that are involved in the process, and I think I referred to it in some of my talking. And the institutional approach that we are advocating talks to us. And if you see what we are proposing at this stage. And part of the RIA process is actually looking at that, where DPI is at the center, and there is influence with the different provincial stakeholders, with PSAP, you know, having the link to the different missions of different countries, the different international organizations, I think those are circled in red, and the different national departments. But when you then go down to the different provincial agencies, looking at the role of local government, different provincial agencies, the organized business, and also the small enterprise development agencies that are actually part of the exporter development chain as well. So we are seeing that as a DTI directs or coordinates and monitors the overall strategy of implementation, and the various elements of the strategy are then implemented or they are devolved across a network of private, public and national and provincial local organizations that have the experience and the expertise, and really clearly defining the roles and responsibilities of each of the different stakeholders, because at the moment there is a duplication of efforts where government will be leading a certain transition, provincial will do. So what will happen is that in the external market, we then create confusion to say, but South Africa was here last week, you know. So really the alignment of roles and streamlining of the activities that we do and consolidation there too. So this is the approach in terms of the institutional framework that we are talking to. And the action plan that then talks to that is strengthening and streamlining the current architecture by specifically including the Expo Council model to the clustering option. Now, I'm going to talk to the NDP later on in that, and where appropriate, really strengthen the regional export formations, such as the Africa Export Council, which is work that TISA is also starting. I think there has been a cluster decision that the must with the opportunities that are arriving in Africa, there needs to be a specific trade platform that really leverages off these opportunities. So really strengthen the existing structures and like the Africa Export Council, or creating one where it's appropriate. And I then spoke to the proposed National Exportment and Development Promotion Bill. Where we are at, we are currently conducting the RIA I mentioned, the step that we are doing. And then the outcome of the RIA will then assess. So that proposal that we have, its efficacy will be tested in the RIA. So we'll assess the institutional framework, and then we'll recommend a national responsible structure that is including the National Export Advisory Council. Now, in one of our last meetings where we had Team Export South Africa with the GTI in the lead and also the African Export Council, there was a really, what is the correct word, where there was a formation or a formation of the media itself, and that was done by the minister under the leadership of Ambassador Fennell as well. Now what the RIA portal is really then look at what are the methodologies of that and the operations, because that media has really been sort of blessed, and minister, we are very grateful that he's committed to actually having this particular engagement with the export council. So that we see in terms of our daily work, but engaging with them quite strategically, at least twice a year, as part of the export formation group. So the RIA will then refine the methodologies of the operational work that does that. And, you know, part of our debate, which I really don't want to delve into, but in our consultations is that, you know, the need for the law. You know, are we not putting more burden onto the country? But what we have found through the research was that specific countries that were very successful in their exports, specifically we look at Malaysia and the Philippines, and we saw that they have an element, an act that talks to export promotion and development, and all stakeholders to a limited or to a very extent actually need to, you know, one of the things all exporters need to register, not just from a staff perspective, but with the various ministries, so that at least when you are now monitoring and evaluating that export performance, you are able to actually have a number that talks to that. So these are different elements that we are considering, having looked at best practice of the different countries. I think the U.S. will also consider, but the RIA process will then determine the extent to which that is done, et cetera, et cetera. So in terms of the third pillar, which I referred to say, which markets do you then prioritize? what you know, do you diversify? Because traditionally in South Africa, the bulk of our trade is still with the developed countries, but we are seeing an increased trend with the increased trade trends with the emerging countries. So specifically, if we are looking at export diversification, how we have come up with the markets that we are currently going into is quite an extensive methodology, but I'll just talk to it. So what we've done, first of all, we identify top high growth markets in each region. So it's not to say within the continent you will have your promotion efforts in all the countries. That would be ideal, but with limited resources, we then had to look at a certain approach, which is really relative to region. So we look at certain criteria, the size of the country, the growth prospects of that country, the purchasing power, and that we really relied on the World Bank, the ease of doing business, which was referred to, I think, in terms of the investment climate, our competitiveness. So there's different that we look at. Then we also then look at our trade tools, the trade map, for instance, to say what's our export potential of a certain product into that country, and we've looked at different categories. So the country, the 500 products that the South Africa country exporting to a country that we've identified, and we've looked at other products which that particular country imports from the rest of the world, and that allowed us through trainer that comes up with indicative trade potential. So out of that, we then said, what are the products that we can then diversify to, looking at where our market share in that country, but looking at, you know, our share in South Africa and in terms of the global imports from that country. So looking at those two areas to say, this is what we think can be exported to that product. So the ultimate result of all that work is then the markets that we have identified in terms of our eco promotion agenda, in terms at least for the 2014-15 year. I mentioned that this will be a living document. I think we are good to go now.
Thank you.
Carry on. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll continue. So you'll see that at least for the coming year, within the continent, we've identified certain countries where there's export opportunities. So this list is where currently in this period our trade promotion efforts will be considered. This is obviously in terms of the stats, but obviously, you know, the developments that then take place. For instance, you know, our activities in North Africa have really kind of subsided due to the political developments in that country. We have increased our efforts to Asia, to Latin America. So we do take cognizance, not just the trade statistics. So this is our methodology of identifying or diversifying our markets. Having said that, the team is also quite cognizant and quite responsive to other developments. I think Russia is a classic example. With the development, you know, there's an opportunity for South Africa to specifically increase its agro-processed products into Russia in the meantime. And there's been a lot of concerted effort across government, with GTI taking the lead to say, how do we then respond to Russia's request of foods when they are not importing those from their traditional providers of those markets? So this is the overview of our target markets, but I do want to emphasize that it does not exclude us being responsive to other developments that can take time. And we have received the blessings from high up, so it's quite easy to then amend that. The targets, the sector that we are talking to in terms of that, I think we had already mentioned that these targets are really aligned to the broader industrialization objectives that have been undertaken by government. And they include a mix of, you know, various levels of value addition, ranging from high to medium to low. And these sectors really are really the sectors that are being supported by the Industrial Policy Action Plan. So you find that when we do a mission, it will either be sector-specific or a participation in national government, but are really, in fact, almost never do we veer away from this particular set of sectors that we actually then support in terms of the work that we do. And the action plan, because of diversity, and because that actually comprises the bulk of our work, is really to improve market access for South African exporters. And really there we are heavily reliant on the work that is done by the acting DDG of ITEF in terms of opening markets and really supporting them in terms of the African regional strategy that they will be updating and us providing input into that. And also looking at the sectoral development strategies that the IDD division is looking at that, as well as wanting to collaborate with them to say, then in terms of promotion efforts, how do we then link up from the excess capacity that makes them come out. I'm utilizing, as I mentioned earlier, on the high-level visits by a political principle to various other fora and linking them with, you know, with other meetings that may be taking place, or asking specifically that they lead the trade missions and our participation at some high-level national pavilions. Really, I think this was mentioned by yourself, Chairperson, yesterday, that the strengthening of our capacity in our diplomatic mission from both a trade and an investment attraction is key. So that's something that the DTI, I think our unit, regularly makes presentation to DIRCO when they are training their future diplomats. In terms of the strategy itself, we've already made the presentation and really using them where we don't have specific DTI representativity in some of those countries. And also similar to the work done by investment, building relationships to explore opportunities. Chess has been a sole example, you know, in an example that comes to mind immediately. And those that have headquarters in the region, and an example would be ADB, which has, you know, a multinational that has its regional headquarters in South Africa, and doing a lot of work in the power sector in the region and really leveraging of that. I was quite excited to see the developments that were done by one of the speakers to say, in addition to just the exports that we identify, you know, the singular products, to say how then are we going to capture or integrate into the regional and the global value chain, specifically services. So we want to commission a study to look specifically at that. But I was quite pleased that there's a lot of work that has been done. And, you know, if it's acceptable, that we would like to actually look at some of that work to see how we can move forward, because that becomes a key part of really your export chain, your export promotion.
And
I think part of the action plan in terms of that, so why we have identified the markets and how we are going to get into them, what are the products that would be suitable or the market preferences that would be considered for specific products, to say, does South Africa have capacity to then produce that product? And, you know, along with the NDP, the developing of capacity internally and broadening the export database. I won't talk too much on that, because when I get to the pillar that talks to that, there's a lot of that. What we've also discovered, I think, at a high level, we saw when we did diversification, is that there's a sectoral overview. But one of the things that we recognize is that it's not sufficient to have a sector view, but to really develop a country product matrix. And I'll make reference to the work that was done most recently in preparation for the state visit for China, where we undertook an exercise to look at our trade with China specifically. And in some sectors overall, at an aggregated level, we perform quite poorly. But when you go to specific products, we are actually, we perform better than the other trade partner that they have in specific line items across the sector. So really to then conduct a mapping analysis and create further linkages with IPAP and contributing, all of that work contributing still to export diversification, and where appropriate, if there are opportunities that come out for cluster development within that. And Having said that, part of that would then also include jointly developing a regional and sector eco plan emanating from the sector strategies. I think I already talked to that. I think the alignment of market opportunities with the negotiated trade agreements, I think that has been dealt with exhaustively in this morning session, but in terms of what we are doing is really aligning our work to the, you know, to the development in the tariff work and the in the trade performance work. This is this pillar that I've really been saying I'll refer to it later on, really in terms of increasing our export capacity and strengthening our export performance through the National Export Development Program, which my colleague is really responsible for. Now, really the NEDP at its core is really looking at providing support to transform the exporter base, so by growing and transforming it. And really, it's also, like the NES itself, it has certain pillars that talk to the export culture by really inculcating that culture through export awareness seminar and really encouraging those exporters that are really doing well, that are higher up in the value chain through export awards. There's an information and advice component of the work that talks to that, and already at the GTI there's been an export help desk that's launched onto the campus, and I think there's a view to actually replicating this across the different provinces. Really, the distribution of the trade leads that emanate from the different visits and the national health pavilions that we go to, which through my colleagues are then distributed to the different exporters, to the export council, to the different trade promotion organizations that are spread across the country. The publications and the tools, I mean, simple doing trading or doing business in Angola. Those are publications that my colleague regularly provides, and that's part of really the information and the advice that is working on. And in the future, there's used to actually having a market research center that really strengthens all of the efforts that I was referring to earlier on. Obviously, there's the awareness internally, the information that is provided, but part of the work can actually include exposing especially the emerging exporters to the different opportunities that are there. And that includes the Global Export Passport Program, which I'll talk to in the next slide, but also exposure through the trade missions, the investment in trade initiatives and the pavilions that the ETI leads, and also to a certain extent that is also done by the provinces as well. And there's also a plan to also do international capacity and building a membership. I know that the Western Cape actually does have a mentorship program that's for exporters. I do, yeah, for looking at where they are really partnering, I think when I asked, where they are partnering an emerging exporter or with an existing exporter to see how they can leverage off that. So it's looking at similar lines to say what is it that can be done in the future. There's obviously special products that then go with the exporter development, you know, where you are now looking at the strength in numbers, for lack of a better word, of exporters, where you would find particularly perhaps exporters that are farming and are packaging a certain fruit or cleaning it, where they would aggregate in an export village. I think my colleague has visited different countries just to see what model could be appropriate, and is currently in the process to see how the first pilot could be done within the GTR. So that whole agglomeration of exporters in a special location, whether that ends up being in a specific SEZ, etc., is something that we are looking to do in terms of really the exporters and accruing the benefits of trade facilitation, of actually being at a location where shipping then becomes easier. So that is part of the work that is being done in the National Export Development Program. And really the leadership that I think the theme that has been running through the presentation to say, the leadership that is then provided by the different export councils that are sector experts in each of them, or the industry association, how they then integrate into this work that we are doing, or taking leadership in some of the work, also other government departments and agencies, and also international organizations where we go to, just in terms of continually upgrading our knowledge. One of the ones that we attend is the International Trade Center, the export development specific element of it. I think the last one
took place in Rwanda.
There's one that's taking place, I think it's Qatar for this year. So where we are also taking the cue from the developments that are taking place abroad, just to align and tweak some of the programs that we have developed in terms of the work. The Exporter Global Passport Program, I think I'll just, okay. What that talks to is really looks at...
Something has come up on the from the Irish ambassador, Liam, and he'll be sending a delegation of seven to what was going to be a courtesy call, I thought. And we do have Ms. Sheldon and Mr. Hermans who will be there from staff. But the impression I initially got was that it was one or two people, the ambassador and someone else. And so I think it would be important, and I only see three of you here, if anyone is interested and can come along, it would be quite constructive, and that is on Friday at 2:30 on the fifth floor. If you need further details, please liaise with Tandy Swap, my executive secretary. Is that in order? That's the Irish ambassador, and you know, they're one of the few countries that were part of that whole pigs issue, which really are managing to pull themselves out. In Portugal, you know, etc., Ireland, Greece is still down there, it seems, and Spain. Okay, thank you. So just let Andiswa know, she'd like to know this afternoon. Is that okay with you guys? You know her number? Or with Mr. Hermans, or Ms. Sheldon. Right, thank you.
So the Global Exporter Passport Program, just in summary, it really looks at the continuum or the different stages of a business of where it would be in terms of the of exporting, and then provides appropriate tools to then support that would be. And really at the base of the program at the beginning is what you would have the curious business or the explorer, where he's still assessing the different, or he or she's still assessing the different options in terms of developing a business, and therein exporting might be a possibility. So the tools that are provided or the instruments that support them are really the export awareness seminars, which are regularly undertaken by my colleague in terms of informing them of the possibilities. Now, later on in the continuum, you'd have someone who is export aware, so they have an idea of what exporting entails, but lacks the necessary knowledge and skill. Again, over and above the export awareness seminars, which would be part of, they would then be introduced to what you would call exporting 101. So that's part of the offering that the GTI is currently doing in terms of really diversifying and deepening the exporter base. Later on, you then have the one who is export ready. So their products have proved, they are developing products, they are there. They require a little bit more in-depth training that then will culminate into a customized export marketing plan. Just to veer away from the slide, but that's something that we also use in terms of when we are then adjudicating companies in terms of their export readiness when we go into the different markets. So we look at various criteria, and one that, you know, what happens is that the graduates of the export global program that he leads would then, receive preference in terms of them participating in our missions, provided they comply with all the relevant other criteria. Then you then have the startup export. So this one is ready, has specific training that really then supports the implementation, not just the marketing plan that we will have, and there are specific workshops that are then undertaken for that exporter. Ultimately, and this is the vision of the global exporters, that all of the exporters would then ultimately then develop into global exporters, where they are now in the process of consolidating the markets that they want to go into and require, and in some instance, market penetration, where government would really unlock some obstacles for them, where they're entering new markets or developing new markets, and that information that talks to doing business that I talked to in the previous slide becomes then appropriate, or where they are now in the phase where they have to develop a specific product for that market, you know, where they've identified an opportunity. So even the workshops that are in that global exporter passport program then cater to the different needs or the different stages of export readiness of the exporter. So that, in a nutshell, is the NEDP pillar. And the action plan that really talk to that is really strengthening the existing mechanism, because similar to the diversification pillar, the NEDP is also work that is already under progress. So in terms of the work that is being done, we are actually already at the second phase of the implementation, but to continue just enhancing those, going to different provinces, talking to different stakeholders, improving the information that's already being provided, and, you know, implementing the various elements of the GE, the Global Export Passport Initiative. I think my colleague is actually at the stage where he's talking to the South African qualification authority, so that there is credence and the recognition, the accreditation that actually goes with the training program that is undertaking, so that it's recognized and that there are different points that talk to that. And setting up the institutional framework for the export village concept, I think I mentioned that he has undertaken a study and is currently at the level of really refining that concept to be reviewed, I think, by our executive board at the DTI. And then in terms of this work, I think one of the elements that I had considered is that we are at the level, we are drafting the strategy, but the implementation cuts across all the different stakeholders. So there are currently SLAs that are being drafted just in terms of roles and responsibility, in terms of the different provincial stakeholders that are part of the export work. The second last pillar that I'll talk to talks to the strengthening of export promotion mechanisms, and really there the view is that the South Africa's value proposition and improved sector branding, that's what we are looking at. So is the, I don't want to say the soft element of it, but it's really how we are perceived outside and what we can do to really improve that. So we have said that, you know, as part of the NEDC, but also as work that's ongoing, export support services that are, we are already doing the exporter training, the capacity building in terms of regulatory compliance, information on trade finance. We are providing logistics in terms of taking flights for some of the missions that we undertake, you know, using different service providers to do the clearing of customs and the packaging of that. So these services that we are already providing, in terms of marketing South Africa, we are already participating in different trade fairs, taking South African exporters outside, conducting specifically what we call inward buying missions, where we encourage buyers from abroad to come, and aligning that with a lot of our, you know, key shows in the country, for instance, food and hospitality, or when WOSA is running their biannual show, where we have specific buyers coming, and the DTI supports that through the export marketing and incentive assistance scheme, which supports exporters and importers, and also to a limited extent also supports in investors. And there has been actually a review of the scheme that has been done by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and there were areas that were highlighted, and when we talk to action plans, I'll talk to what was that. And work that we have already also doing just in terms of that, providing sector information at firm level, market surveys, and this we usually share with our diplomats abroad, so that information is also passed across to the would-be buyers and also the would-be investors. This slide just talks to when you are doing our work. This is a survey of 50 countries that talks to nation branding. South Africa in the 2012-2013 period came out 36th overall in terms of you know, the view that it held. And it looks at different elements, to say tourism, investment, exports, specifically the culture and the heritage. It would be very interesting to see the latest one given the developments of the country, but we also consider this in terms of our mission branding. And the things that we actually want to do there is really a leverage our relationship with Band SA, Proudly SA, the government, the different chamber movements and other business proponents that then become our ambassadors abroad in terms of our, you know, speaking from the same stage, the Team South Africa or the South Africa Inc., that strengthening our collaboration between government and the private sector just to ensure that our brand, our identity, our national brand is carried through by or is reflected by the different stakeholders that are engaged in this process, but also making sure that internally for the greater awareness regarding the export instruments that are provided for the locals and also the MES that support the inward buying, because we have a specific leverage. Not all countries have this type of fund in terms of MES supporting buyers. So this is something that we can really, information that so that we can really disseminate it, and we want to do this by having a dedicated website, because at the moment the information is there on the GTI website, but it almost has to be, you know, fish through. So it's something that we want to really highlight, to bring it to the fore, to say these are the packaging and offerings that we have. And I think for ourselves, at the moment, we didn't really put the structure or organizational at that. That's not in the presentation. But we are region-based in terms of the web-based. So you would have a regional manager for Asia with a supporting structure. And all of us do the work. But we also, just like a strategy, want to have an evaluating unit. At the moment, that's limited to really just assessing the export sales that we facilitate. But just in terms of everything across the entire value chain, it's something that we want to do within the unit. And depending the degree to which the we are from, something that should also be replicated in the other trade promotion organizations as well. And I think really part of the work in terms of national branding and our identity is really continue to do what we are doing in the diversification pillar, you know, going into new markets, etc., developing sector-specific penetration models. So all the things that we are really doing in pillar three of market diversification, really continuing all of that work. The last pillar that the strategy talks to is really enhancing our incentives and our financing. I think in the evidence that came out through the analysis, that the various challenges that really talk to, that are encountered by the exporter, access to finance, the cost of finance itself, you know, credit insurance at the moment, the ECIC and various other organizations are really, you know, they can be a hurdle to the export process. So looking at that, the current suite of incentives which are based on the supply side and their development in nature, I spoke to Emia, which really does partially compensate the exporter for his exports. You know, really for us, our screening efforts in terms of really looking at the export readiness of each of the individuals so that we get maximum bang or return for the expense or the funding that is provided to that, you know, before we address the competitive issues and the export skills. So looking at that whole thing. So this chapter really talks to that. And the action plan, in terms of what we want to do, really we want to maintain the inner instruments. At the moment, the money that we have, we then use that to reach our target of facilitating export sales per financial year. And the target for this year is 3.5 billion from a base of about 120 million. That's really funding the whole plethora of freight logistics in the missions that GTI lists. I think there have been different conversations to say what the feasibility of an export-import bank, and that's work that has been assigned to the ECIC, because other countries that do have leverage over us do have this particular instrument and they use it quite effectively. And then I think the first part of the work is the ongoing review of and the improvement of our export incentives. You know, one of the things that we've discovered is that for the very lengthy national pavilions, you know, there's different rules that, you know, you find that some of the costs are inhibitive, so we would want to support the exporter a little bit more to make sure they participate in the longer one, but also putting conditionalities to the support that we give. So just the ongoing improvement of the incentives that we have, and then the engagement of the with the different development finance institutions. I think specifically when it comes to infrastructure projects, one of the meetings that was held at the DGI was that, you know, there needs to be special consideration to support the export of our services, especially infrastructure, by really, you know, if for lack of a better word, looking at a customized, I don't want to say fund, to support, you know, South African exporters of services in the major infrastructure projects. Because you find that the business person is responsible for securing funding, but the terms of conditions of the IDC are not necessarily aligned to the insurance or the criteria of the ECIC. So that was just a discussion to say the improving of access to finance overall is something that needs to be considered, and also including the different institutions that we have. It's something that we need to look at as well. Reducing the cost of export credit insurance is something that is very strongly in our different engagements, to say we need to engage the ECIC to adopt a more developmental role in terms of this work, and ongoing engagements with the National Treasury on the cost of credit insurance, and to say, could this be recouped in other ways? So these are discussions, you know, that need to happen, and, you know, the extent to which that can be done without necessarily also just exposing our exporters to unnecessary burden. I think in terms of that, just the enhance the promotion of the existing instrument, financial instruments, you know, through the normal promotion material. That's something, because there's we have come to realize the DTI that are very few people that know about the offerings that you have. So you would have people that do use the funds, though we do have limitations in terms of your usage per annum, but really in terms of widening the export is to say, in addition to the mission that people are aware of, there's also funding or support that then goes with it, with a specific role show than the normal traditional export mechanism, promotion mechanism that go with that.
What we're going to do is we go to page 56, we'll read the rest, and as part of the monitoring, etc., can you take us through page 56, thank you. Right.
Okay. Basically, in the implementation of that, I think we saw that in the summit, there's quite a long horizon, and the things that we want to do in the short term through the different pillars. The culture, those are, you know, low-hanging fruit, things that can be done immediately. The MEDD program is already in existence. The RIA process, which is currently underway, really inform, you know, the extent to which the act or the bill and the input into the white paper what. So these are things that are really, in the short term, are able to do. The national and the sector branding through our work with Cloud DSA, Grand SA, the stuff that we're already collaborating with them. The competitiveness issues, I think when I did that 4-year approach, those are things, because they require the alignment of different, over the short term, something financing a key issue with the different stakeholders, the manufacturing capacity and capabilities of South Africa, you know, the IDB taking a lead on that, and ongoing national and sector branding, improving that over the horizon. And in the long term, I think the impediments to exports, the infrastructure, I think in terms of border out issues or at the border issues, the infrastructure, the logistics that are being talked to, if you are going to consider, you know, the different programs that are going on into the continent, where I think you made a comment yesterday that it's cheaper to take something by sea internally than by road. So those issues in bilateral or in multilateral forums, to say, what is it that is being looked at? So the IMS takes that long-term horizon, and it's got deliverables in the short, medium, and long term.
Really, thank you very much, Ms. Mkhize. You know, you certainly show your extensive experience here that you've shared with us, but I'm sure we're going to have to, as a committee, we will be inviting you back, you know, to go into greater detail on some of the other aspects here. But are there any comments, questions, etc., Mr. Williams, Mr. Cornell, Mr. Hill-Lewis?
Thanks, Chairperson. I've just got two questions. I'd like to know, first of all, is there an exporter's handbook, like you've got the importer's handbook?
Yeah.
And secondly, I was a bit surprised, although I might have missed it. It looks all very complicated to become an exporter, but you can sit at home in front of your computer and you can manufacture, I don't know, something small in your garage, and you can start a website and you can sell your stuff internationally and you can get paid internationally. So I want to know, where does the IT, the small business, from their house fit into this picture? Because you've mentioned it, you haven't mentioned it at all, and potentially you could take all the unemployed youth and pay them to make something and have them selling stuff like that, and it's not such a big issue. In fact, you can get quite big exporting and not go through all the loops and jumping around all the things you have to do through you. I'd rather perhaps just not go through you and do it at home. In my bad business, remember, we were talking about yesterday.
Issues like that. No, Mr. Williams, I know where you're heading, right? Could you settle that much? Thank you. Yeah, but that's a very valid point. Could be the future, right?
Thank you, sir. It will be quick. You know, I've got a key interest in the wine industry. It's a very well established wine industry in South Africa, and in a product as well. But, and as you know, it's the only one on the continent of Africa, a proper wine industry. But if you travel to Africa, you struggle to get South African wine. And I don't know whether the DDI is doing enough and taking a partnership hands with Wines of South Africa, and to see whether we can really attack the tariff structure of Africa, because you see more French and Chilean wines in Africa than our own South African wines.
Now, I really think that's an important industry. It's also very labour intensive, as you know. Yes, Mr. Hill Lewis?
Yes, I really want to say that over the last few years, I think the DDI has really started upping its game on export promotion. I think the plan that you presented today is broadly very impressive and quite comprehensive. And of course, it depends on how much money you can spend doing this, because you need a lot of resources to implement the plan that you outlined for us today. And the DDI is going to have to commit several hundred million rand to that plan. There's no doubt about it. Maybe a billion, yes, well, that might be ambitious, but really, if we want to compete with the likes of Brazil or India in export promotion, we have got to be able to box toe-to-toe with them on what they spend on export promotion. So that the plan looks great on paper, and I hope that the DTI makes the resources commitment necessary to make the plan a reality. The one or two concerns that I have is that, you know, when you get a lot of civil servants and politicians in a room, we love to come up with action plans and lots of pillars and things to implement. And what it ends up representing in industry is a lot of more red tape that they have to go through and bureaucracy that they have to comply with. So we must be very careful that all of these things don't actually end up being a burden on business with more paperwork that they have to fill out. It's exactly what Mr. Williams has just said. You know, is it not just easier to ignore all of this and find export on your own? If businesses don't feel like they're actually getting value from engaging with the DTI's export promotion agency, then they'll ignore it. Then a specific question about the legislation that you spoke about, and following on from the point I just made about red tape, are you requiring every single exporter in the country to register with you, or is it just those that want to take part in the export promotion program and go through the training and the, you know, the passport program and all that, or is it everyone who is registering? But then I would start to become concerned that it's just another registration that you have to do. Then the other thing is, again, following on from government's preference for very nice action plans, when you export products, as Adrian has said, you are a business, you find a customer, and you supply that customer with a product or service. That's the transaction. So obviously, companies have a huge financial incentive to go out there and actively hunt for customers and sell them their product. And that's the way that the system works, and that's fantastic. But what we need in government, in the export promotion agency, is people who are not just going to kind of tick the boxes in the action plan, but we actually need people who are deal makers to go out there and say, where is there a need or an opportunity, a gap for South African products, and where can we find a South African supplier to meet that need who may not have seen that opportunity themselves? And so the DTI, or your team, needs a group of really motivated deal makers, and I frankly think that they should be financially motivated to do that. If they can secure a major export contract for South African products abroad, then they should be incentivized with some kind of commission deal or something like that. Because what we want is South African salesmen going out around the world and selling South African products and getting those supply deals. And he's absolutely right when he talks about the wine situation. I'll give you another example. Some of us were recently at the BRICS summit in Russia, in Moscow. And I know there were DTI, I saw some of your colleagues there from DTI, they were walking out there as well. Now, Russia currently has got some sanctions against it. And so what is really interesting is that in Russia at the moment you can't get any of the speciality cheeses. No camembert or brie, whatever. Feta, nothing. You can't get it. You can only get basic mozzarella and cheddar. Now, what we need is a team of South African deal makers to say, right, there's an opportunity. South Africa makes some of the best cheeses in the world, better or as good as anything you can get out of Europe. But Europe can't send their cheeses to Russia anymore because of the sanctions. So let's get our guys to step into the gap and set up a supply line there. So those are the kind of opportunities we've got to always be looking for and on the hunt for. But that's going to require us to not be kind of box ticking the action plans, but to be very proactive about it. Thanks.
A couple of things, Ms. Nkiza, we would like, as a committee, we really would want to dig down deeper into the new integrated national export strategy, because that is really going to shift into a higher gear, you see. And the other thing about how exactly are we using skills development as a catalytic element, to leverage our advancement there. The other thing is that, we hear all about this, and really, one goes to constituencies here, there, and everywhere, and very few potential entrepreneurs, exporters, know very much about these, incentives, etc., etc. And I think the point was really made by Mr. Williams about what did you call it, exporter's handbook, but along those lines. And one would hope you wouldn't print it in that palest of blue, or whatever, palest of grey. But, something that you can look at when you've got a candle or something. Right. Then the other thing here is the tariffs. You refer on page 13 quite, constructively here. And I think this week, if you could just explain it a bit more to us, because the BBBE is here, and as you put it, tariffs on downstream industries, particularly those that are strategic and employment or value addition, and that's what we're really trying to do. We're trying to add value in the downstream. And I think where we're looking at linkages with legislation and now these exports, etc., you've got here even a beneficiation strategy. So, the ins at a glance. The other thing is this gated level you spoke about, huh? You referred to a visit to China, I think it was. Was it yourself referring to a state visit to China? No. But I mean, when you do come to responding, this gate, you referred to the average gated level, of the different products. Be helpful if we, you just tell us a little bit more about how that works. And JAG, I'm sure it's not that TV program, JAG. It's probably the Joint Action something. Okay, Joint Action what? JAG Government or whatever. Remember, no acronyms. Thanks.
And lots of questions, but thank you very much. I will attempt to answer all of them. I think in terms of the Exporters Handbook, we have published one in the recent past, and I think we do need to actually update it and make it more relevant, but more
more recent. I mean, we do have quite a comprehensive export handbook as well. Okay. Definitely. And I think that just cuts across to the various points that you've made. I don't want to skip, but about people being aware of our export funding, export, you know, the influence that we have. So one of these actions is that really, we really need to create awareness around the product offerings of the DTI as a whole, whether it be the handbook, whether it be the EMEA, so that the entrepreneurs then become aware of them. I think the questions on the entrepreneur who is sitting behind the desk and could really create a product or services that could they could sell without really the involvement of the DTI. There is a possibility, and one of the things that we've done, I had mentioned that in terms of how we are structured, in terms of doing the work, we are region-based. We have just gotten approval from the DPSA, et cetera, to create a services directorate, because there are so many, there's so much exports sales that are not being captured or being facilitated in the realm of services of telecommunications, of online sales, you know, the likes of the of products that are being sold through the eBays, the Kalahari of the world, to say how is that in terms of actually then in terms of exports. This is not talking to the point, but one of the things that we discovered through engaging with the flight forwarder was actually that we've discovered that in terms of import, you can even import a product using in America using a local address that the freight forwarder or the agency will actually create for you and even import that. So that whole realm is something that we really have not looked at as the DTI, the e-portal, et cetera, et cetera. So we've created, we've gotten this permission to create this directory that's really going to look at the services, export of services in its entirety, along with the nuances that come with that, you know, the advent of e-sales or online sales and how we can integrate into that. So I don't have a comprehensive response to you, but it's something that we are looking at. At this point in time, we really have not looked at it comprehensively. Talking to wine, I think I'm proud to say that actually in terms of wine, we are doing a lot of support, providing a lot of support to the South African wine industry, not just in Africa. There are specific wine shows, for instance, the CL China, where we specifically support South African wines to go into those markets. A different example, that's CL China, which is a specific national pavilion. I think my colleague and I went specifically to the China Expos, which is our flagship program in China, and we took a sizable quantum of wine producers of South Africa to actually engage into those markets. In our trade missions, which are usually multi-sectoral, just to use our resource efficiently, the agro processing sector, I think between rooibos and wine, those two compete quite sizably just in terms of participation. So in terms of our limited resources, I think we are doing a lot for wine, but I'm very proud that in this year, the WOSA is doing the wine show in September, and we are bringing 50 buyers from different countries to actually come to that show. We are funding those buyers to come in, and in collaboration with WOSA, there's a specific program where they will be taken to the different wine estates through the product. So we are really supporting the wine industry a lot, and we are actually seeing the results of the support that we actually give to the wine sector. So I think if you looked at the number of sectors that we have, you know, to split, and wine falls into the agro processing sector, but I must say within that, with the you know, the condiments, the sauces, etc., where South Africa has got a specific advantage. If you look at the Middle East, Anando sauces. So between those condiments and the actual wines, the South Africa, we are really making inroads. I think WOSA on its own, and this is where when we were talking, WOSA on its own without DTI leading does actually do its own wine shows. They do tap into the SAF funding, which is a fund that's administered by another team, to actually go to the West African market where they're making inroads. I think Most recently, there's been a mission, or will be, to Ghana and Nigeria specifically, because what's happening is that in the African countries where traditionally, especially in the Francophone countries, you used to have a dominance of these French wines, etc. Now, in terms of our strategy, just exporting as a whole, we emphasize value addition. So most of the wines that we do promote are the niche products, because when you look at the smorgasbord that actually appears in the shelves in other countries, the Chilean one, they are priced very low, and I'm saying it's not without any reason. So we are pitching our ones at a very niche, as a luxe product. So you do have those issues of to the unrefined palate, and I'm saying it with respect, you know, wine is wine. So you'll find was doing very specific targeted efforts of wine tasting, wine pairing. I think the China Expo that we did a specific wine tasting, wine pairing with a sommelier, and that is work that we just need to do to just get our product into it and to distinguish them from the plethora of wines that would be featured by the retailer. But I think I can comfortably say that in terms of DGI's effort, I'm excited about the work that we are doing with wine. I mean, in China, I think there was a comment made yesterday that you need a burgeoning middle class. We are actually seeing that in the spirits and in the wine, there's increase in consumption of those wines. So we are seeing the effect of that. I think I do want to say thank you for the comment about that we've upped our game in terms of what we've done. But, you know, to say in terms of, you know, there's danger in our action plans of actually putting more administrative burden on the exporter, etc., etc. The real process, we were very specific in our terms of reference to say, do the best batches, get the best inputs, because we really, in a true sense of regular impact assessment, look at all the aspects. What is industry saying? What are the exporters saying? What are the different export formations saying in terms of that? Because in the chapter, our thinking is that the DTI will coordinate and monitor and evaluate, but the implementation thereof will devolve down to the different trade promotion, you know, the joint association, the industry association, the export council. So this is our thinking, but we really do not want to prescribe or dictate. So with the RIA process is quite extensive, saying what is industry saying, not just industry, what are the other export formations in the province, and actually saying what will be the best institutional framework that then talk to that. The decision to regulate, just because we saw the benefit in the other countries, by actually having a sizable, you know, able to attribute quite a high export sales through the mechanisms, that the aim always, I think, from a perspective, is not to add administrative burden. Anything that will help us keep a track on who our exporters, because immediately when you do have, and I'll use the example that was raised by Lima, that if you are now actually transacting and trading on an online platform, you know, yes, SARS will pick that up. But in terms of our work, do we have a tab on the sale, or, you know, the sales that are going out, are they classified properly? Are they picked up correctly in terms of the code? Do we see the trends in what is actually, what are the products, what are the different market preferences? And therefore, when you then talk to product development and sector development, you actually do need to have that information. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but it's scattered throughout. You have the SIC code, you have the SO code, and you always need to map, you know, the work to really have over. So the law itself is really aimed at streamlining and strengthening, and we are being as transparent as possible to say what will be the best practice, and then we will come. I think the process of the of legislation and the bill will eventually, you know, come to this, and it will be debated to the extent that we have done with the investment bill. So that work will definitely come, but the intention is not to add administrative burden, but it's really to enhance our export and to really get to those goals that were highlighted in the national targets. I think as the question was being asked as well, you know, linking the earlier question to IT, I do want to, you know, to just join the example that was raised by UNIT yesterday when he said that units in terms of CTIC company registration. You know, when he went, I think it's the example of Singapore, when you can register your company in under 27 seconds. I think everything that the INEF aims to do is really to streamline and strengthen. And if the e-portals do make doing business easier, then so be it. But let us take the information from the stakeholders that will provide that. The deal makers, I think the honourable member who raised that point, I would love to have deal makers. I think anecdotally within the unit, we actually call ourselves business development executives because that's precisely what we want to do. We want to go into the market and create an appetite and a demand for the South African product. Within the limited resources that we have, we are doing the best that we can in terms of using the instruments that we have. What we also do, I think, you know, we didn't go through that process or the sales cycle that we do in terms of our work. But a lot of work goes into, obviously, understanding the country, engaging with our representatives abroad, but also engaging with the different trade representatives that exist in the country, so the embassies that are here, you know, distributing with the different export councils, our databases or directory, you know, the Fresh Produce Export Council has got a specific one. The electrotechnical of their members that, you know, they are accountable will be able to supply products. So all of that work is being done. But at this stage, I think with the constraints on the fiscus, I don't think we'll be incentivizing people per deal. What we do, and I think it comes up in the minister's address, we do actually, when we provide examples, I think in terms of the budget vote, where we have said where DTI has facilitated certain sales, we do report on that, or even deals, transactions or joint ventures that are actually that are a result of our export promotion work when we do. So we do report on that, and that is done by the entrepreneur themselves. But I do want the committee to say that part of what the DTI or government as a whole, and this is where our value proposition is as a government, is that we are able to unlock doors that a would-be entrepreneur or an exporter is not necessarily able to do when he's engaging on his own, because exports do happen with or without government facilitation. But you will find that when we have most recently, we had an outward selling mission to Mozambique, at TET and also at Maputo, where the export council, they've even set up a hub to look at that. So the participants were very excited because the audience or the Mozambican audience that we are able to draw as an audience is something that is not necessarily available if an entrepreneur were going it alone in terms of that. You know, I can say convincingly that even the Checkers example, personally I have worked with Anglo-American. I was stationed in the DRC in terms of actually assisting them with some of getting their goods to the sites that are there where government intervention or access, we are able to leverage off this access that we have through our work and the work that is done by the DE. So the value that we provide as government is that we are able to, first of all, for the new exporter, just enable them to get to the market. You know, the EMEA fund also enables them to do research, to actually go into the market. So the value that we add is that a new exporter wouldn't have the means to go to these different markets, participate in these pavilions, so we provide that financial support, but also provide an audience that would not be available to them immediately. So I do want to emphasize that. And then, I'm winding up. The question on that was raised on cheese at the BRICS summit, et cetera, and the sanctions. First of all, I think, we have even been, you know, commended for our responsiveness to the Russia issue. I think in a space of time we would normally have one mission to Russia. Last year, or in the financial year, we had three. We did one for meat specific, we did one for fresh foods. We even supported Russian buyers to come to our one of our pavilions in Germany for fresh fruit so that they could see. So we were able to respond very positively. But if there's one thing that I can appeal to the committee, I think in your engagement with your counterparts, there is a specific issue that is debilitating to South African exports in the agro-processing sector. And that's really the protocols that the Department of Agriculture, so for dairy, then needs to respond to. And it's across a number of countries.
And our agriculture.
Yes, so you will find that, for instance.
And just use it with cheese as an example.
Yeah, okay. Okay, with cheese or dairy, it falls into dairy, that each of the veterinary institutions, yeah, the vets, or those standards bodies needs to ensure that whatever product comes into the country is safe for consumption, etc., etc. So if you use dairy, they will have the inspectors then coming into the South African dairy farm, looking at the processes, the hygiene, etc. So the specific things that need to be checked by the recipient country, we do the same in terms of trade with other countries. So there's a particular shortage, and I'm saying this, in terms of our ability to respond to completing these forms by the other countries, and that's the mandate of DEF. So for all the work that the DTI can do in promoting our agro-processed products, different countries, the Middle East, it's the
East for Russia.
Yeah. For Russia, one of the things, it's meat. We did a trade mission. We've done the meat, but we even supported the inspectors to come to our abattoirs. Immediately, that was on meat. DEF facilitated the inspectors to come for fish. In that short time, immediately one of our companies was able to export to the value of $1 million immediately after that. But where the appeal that I'm making is that we need to strengthen our ability to complete the protocol so that our product can then gain entry, because without those protocols, we can create the appetite, we can create the demand, but they will not gain entry into that particular market. For instance, going back to China, there were protocols that were signed for maize and for apples last year during the state visit through the president. Immediately in January, the first quarter, we saw a spike in exports for apples, which previously didn't have access into that market. So there's this to and froing where there's a dependency on another department by the chief.
What we will be looking at, especially in the committee program itself, is when we look at this area to specifically address that, you see, and we'll certainly brief Mr. Herman on that with respect to the program itself. So I think if you can address your final one or two questions.
Okay. I won't go into the... You asked the question on tariff, but I think a similar question had been raised to Ms. Polaram. That's fine. I think the last one that I will talk to, I think, is the... You asked the question around the work that we did on China when we said that at an aggregated level. What we were saying... Yes. What we were saying is that in our action plans, we've got sector proposals, export promotion plans, but there's also a need to do a country-specific product, because when we were preparing for the state visit, at a sector level, you find that we are performing poorly. But when you disaggregate that sector and you look at specific line items, you find that in a specific product, we have advantage. So moving away in the future from sector-specific to product-specific just strengthens our export promotion efforts. And then the other question, just talk to us coming back, just to talking to the strategy more in depth. That is what I can talk to. There was reference made to the bag. Those are the different export formations that we, across all the pillars, we just continue talking to. So I didn't know that you wanted specifically around the joint action groups or industry associations.
No, I just wanted it clear that it is a joint action group on what, how many you have and the areas they cover.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
But I mean, they can come back to us.
Okay.
Because what we are hoping, Ms. Mkiza, out of this workshop, is our first workshop on trade. Trade investments, you know, with the linkages to industrialization, because of course of the strategic shift of industrialization policy driving strategic trade and investment and export. So for many of us here, it would have been
the first time in, you know, in this term, and indeed in 10 years that we would have dealt with this. And there's so much more to get on this 50% of our mandate, which we very seldom touch. But I do want to thank you, and certainly we wish your EDG everything of the best and health improving, and we hope that through Ms. Naidu, we will be kept informed of her progress, you know. And I don't know what she fell on, was it a stair or whatever?
No, it was not there.
It wasn't in part.
No, I think that, yeah, because of the strong wind.
Oh, the strong wind, yes. Well, 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 we all know that strong wind, yes. All right. Well, certainly it just goes to show we have to be a bit more careful, whatever. But thank you once again. And all of you who today made inputs, that was yourself, wasn't it, Ambassador Faisal Ishmael, who kicked us off, and then followed by Barelwa from the Peters, and then by yourself, Mr. Kiza. It's very seldom that we have a chief director who's able to cover as a subject so extensively and comprehensively. And you could teach your colleagues a thing or two who are chief directors. Certainly, and I mean that. The other thing is all of those who've made presentations here, the ones who made presentations yesterday, like Professor Madrach, Ms. Wentworth, all of the others, yourself, Eunice, etc. It's just a little reminder that it makes life a lot easier if the pages are numbered. It's very difficult for us, and you know, often the slides look similar. And we really welcome updates as fast as they come, of course. But what we do want to see is when you do have a week's notice, because after all, this is at the top of your head and you're not researching, then we would expect to get that, what do you call it, presentation or whatever, at least, you know, a few days before, you know, 3 days or so before, because it's not so much that MPs can't read fast. It's the machines that don't work as fast as is required. Human beings are working faster than the machines in this parliament. I mean, they've got one colour photo setter, one, the whole of parliament, the committees. So we need, you know, to space it out. And it's very, very important. But we do welcome updates that we received this morning. To the staff who are the left, you know, the surviving staff here, Mr. Medina, and yourself, Ms. Sheldon, and Denver across there, we would welcome all of the latest documents. You know, bits and pieces have been handed out. And that the new the members who were not here, all the medically unfit, well, no, I don't want to use the word unfit, but, you know, that medically compromised, would need to get the latest documents. Don't go and waste time and paper giving them old stuff. Give them the latest documents, etc. And for those who were not presenters, but you came here perhaps to learn more, and indeed I'm the first one to say I welcome members of the media who want to update themselves on information. When we were in finance, we're amazed at the lack of knowledge financial journalists displayed. And, you know, you can hardly write an article if you don't have, you know, the finances, etc. And finance, trading industry is not the same as finance. It is simply not the same. It's a different angle there, and we really want everyone and all the committee researchers and committee staff that are here from other committees, and Clive Hobson, who's here from Mr. Kalako, the whip of the trade ministry, thank you for being here and making sure that your colleagues do get updated, considering that they haven't been here because of the medical reasons. Deloitte Touche, is it one of the, did they do this with you, did you buy this book?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see the DTI, etc. Now that's very nice narrow columns, but what would be helpful, if they're going to print a content page in blue and grey, let them consult an industrial psychologist
and an ophthalmic person, and I feel that those are worse colours to see. Had he then consulted anyone? You know, so we can't read the content page. But there it is, I think you can, can you, Adrian? Yeah, good. But thank you once again, and I want to remind you about the Irish ambassador, Nick, Adrian, Jordan Hill, anyone you can go. I see it's 2 o'clock on Friday or whatever, but just make sure about that, all right? And next week we get to meet, you should all have your programs, all of you. It's Tuesday the 28th, 9 o'clock sharp. You know, we'll be authorities on this. Right, meeting adjourned. Trade industry workshop.